Welcome to Well Good Movies, the podcast for film fans by film fans. Every episode we look at films old and new to choose what should be preserved for all time in our movie vault. With lively topics, big questions and crazy challenges to entertain us and our guests, we always look to have fun by giving you the topics worth discussing and the movies worth watching. Even if there are some duds along the way. But don't just take my word for it. Here's a preview of what to expect in today's episode.
What was that?
See, that was throwing me off, because then I started thinking of, like, wait, what sort of, like, animated animal characters had filmed in the 90s?
I heard it the first time and thought somebody did something.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Are you not entertained?
I am your father.
Wait!
Well Good Movies!
Hello and welcome to Well Good Movies, the podcast that gives you the topics worth discussing and the movies worth watching. I am your host, David Osger, and I am joined as ever by my co-host, who is somebody who likely would like to take over the world as many comic book movie villains do with an army of evil robots. It's Craig McDonald.
You say that as if I'm not in the process of doing it.
Well, I said probably, so you know, I'm just speculating.
I mean, I'm part of an organization called Snail World Org.com, so I'll let you understand exactly what I'm doing at this point.
Okay, so Craig's in the process of deleting Jarvis and taking over his consciousness. By the end of the episode, maybe we'll save the day. So, how have you been, Craig?
I've been good. I've been incredibly tired. I don't know if that's the sort of information about my life that you wanted.
Busy as always.
Yeah. No, I've literally spent every single day this week at the debating competition, and it is needlessly exhausting.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I'd be busy as well, but then I've also balanced it out with a lot of Marvel watching, as we'll get to today. I was like going through pretty much all of the key Avengers films and Captain America films in preparation for all these series we get in. And it was really weird once I finished. I was just like, oh, I don't have like a massive major blockbuster to watch tonight. And sometimes it was like two a night. So it was crazy. And it goes to show watching different franchises in certain orders, you know, without being like, I'm going to watch them all. I was like, oh, I'm just going to watch these specific, you know, Cap films and the Avengers ones. And yeah, and it was interesting how it like reads differently and how that influences your experience.
Yeah, I found myself doing that mostly in November. So yeah. I completely agree with you there. I didn't realize I'd have to be doing it for any greater purpose. So that was good. I was somewhat prepared.
Yeah, I think a lot of people during lockdown have done some Marvel watch-throughs. And, you know, today that's what we wanted to talk about was the MCU and Marvel. Because, of course, WandaVision has now premiered on Disney+, which is the first bit of MCU we are getting for quite a long time since Spider-Man Far From Home. So it's been a very long time coming. There's obviously now a lot of speculation and a lot of love going around for this show, especially because these are two characters that everybody has always sort of been very close to and found very epic, etc. So we wanted to sort of talk today about their introductory film, which is Avengers Age of Ultron, as well as their story up till now and how interesting it is that we have two characters that originate in a movie which are now gone to television, which will be the case for a lot of Marvel heroes, where it's usually the other way around. So to talk to us about all of that is our guest today. It's his first time on the show. He is an old friend of mine and Craig's. And he is a comic book guru. He's also a big movie fan. So please welcome Tom Gapper, everyone.
Hello, hello. Nice to be here. And nice to see that the comic book guru thing is sticking. definitely going to...
Just to clarify for previous listeners of the show, Tom is a comic book guru, not the comic book guru we had in a past episode. Ooh.
I was thinking that. I was just like, we have had the comic guru, so I don't want to like tread on anybody's, you know, toes here, but it's
I'll just come up with a different name, but it's fine. Yeah, it's I'm happy to be on the show. I'm glad to be here, and well, I'm just curious to see how Craig's world domination plot is going to pan out over the course of the episode.
Yeah. We're all curious. We're all like, yeah, watching it.
I for one, like, welcome our new bearded overlord.
I promised a lot of possums. That's all I can say.
For some reason, I'm okay with that, and I'm not sure why. But yeah, I'm looking forward to discussing WandaVision today. And yeah, just glad to be here.
Tom, tell us just a bit about yourself as like a movie fan and like a comic book fan. What are some of your favorite franchises, some of your favorite movies? How do you see yourself as a movie buff?
As a movie buff, I'd definitely say there are probably buffier people than me, but I do enjoy watching films, especially all the comic book stuff, even back to some of the earlier days of comic book movies where it was a wildly different world. I don't know if you've ever seen Shaquille O'Neal as Steel. that's something. But yeah, no, generally the MCU has got to have a shout out in terms of like favorite franchises. I mean, MCU was just huge in terms of being a comic book fan, because never before had you seen films on comic book characters so like dedicate themselves to getting the characters right and actually doing the original source material justice, even if they were leaning into the Ultimate Universe there. But that's something else. So yeah, for me the MCU was a huge thing, and I do love it. But then also big shout out to the original X-Men trilogy, which some could argue was the original comic book shared universe. But so those films in general have had a big effect on me growing up. And then other films, just in terms of I love anything surreal. Any surreal films you can think of, I'm all over that. Anything with Daniel Day-Lewis in, I'm just a sucker for that guy. It's something I've been getting into a lot more recently, just like watching more films and more TV shows outside of like the superhero stuff. For a little while there, I was kind of trapped in just watching all the superhero stuff, but trying to break out of that now and become a bit more of a cinephile, as it were.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, well, we're happy to go on that journey with you. And like I said, you know, we all love some surreal stuff on here as well. I don't know if you did manage to watch it or not, but I revisited Too Many Cooks. But yeah, when I was watching that, I was like, this is so surreal. So if you haven't checked it out yet, check it out, because it is just bizarre, surreal. Craig can attest to it. He's the one who like introduced me to it. So yeah.
That makes sense. It's groundbreaking and mind-crushing.
Yeah, those are two of my favorite things. So
the more I watched it, the more I was like, I was like this kind of is WandaVision. I want this to be WandaVision. So it's going to be very fun today, guys. We're going to be talking about, like I said, the characters of Wanda and Vision and the films that they've appeared in, and especially Age of Ultron, because like I said, it's a sort of overlooked Avengers film, and I know that a few of us here have some, you know, good memories of it and some, you know, I don't want to say controversial opinions, but, you know, it's going against the grain in some ways, I suppose. You know, first of all, I wanted to start off by getting into the mood of the MCU, and especially Wanda and Vision, because obviously these films and series and stories are all about long-running story arcs and, you know, knowing how they started and what happened in what film and all that kind of stuff. And we're going to be talking about all of that today. But I wanted us to sort of, like, get the consensus of it right at the beginning. So I wanted to challenge you guys to tell me the story of Wanda and Vision up until this point in 1 minute. And I'm going to give it to Craig first, because, you know, he's not, you know, this is not his first time on the podcast. So I'm not going to be cruel in giving Tom a big challenge straight away. So Craig, do you think you're ready for this challenge?
I just want to check. You do mean the MCU version? Because if you expect the comic book version, where it's just like, right, okay, so Scarlet Witch is Magneto's daughter.
Started in 1980. Yeah, no, that would be hilarious, but no.
In West Philadelphia, born and raised on a plane.
I'm not that cruel. So no, you have to give us like her story from, you know, canon or whatever you want to say in the MCU, and I'm giving you 1 minute, and I found a very epic countdown clock which I think will add to the atmosphere of this situation. So you'll know when the countdown starts, Craig, by this hilariously epic and maybe overly dramatic countdown. So are you ready?
Yep.
And go.
Okay, child in Sokovia, brother of Pietro Maximoff. Her parents were killed in like a bombing situation with Stark technology, which basically led to her wanting vengeance to the point that she volunteered for Hydra experiments. She then became superpowered. She fights the Avengers, eventually gets recruited by Ultron to help him basically end the Avengers. Turns out basically wants to end the world. So she joins the Avengers, helps them. Then the Sokovia Accords basically starts because of the fact that she accidentally bombs a facility. Like a Wakandan outreach program. Then she's basically under house arrest. Then she basically joins Captain America's side in the Civil War, then gets arrested when that side loses. She then leaves with Vision because they're in love. They're in Edinburgh. They get attacked by Thanos' goons, join up with everyone. She then has to kill Vision, but Vision's brought back to be killed again. She gets wiped out, comes back, fights Thanos, and now we have WandaVision.
That was good. That was very good.
That was close. That was close.
Why did you do it so intensely loud? So I'm trying to hear myself think, and all kind of goes da 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 da. What the hell?
Yeah, that was part of the epicness of the music. When I first found that, I was like, are they going to do this for every like second, like 58 57, that would have been incredible. But a great effort there, and you know, you've given Tom like a good head start now. I'm sure he's already thinking how he's going to do it. Tom,
I was just too engrossed in Craig's incredible storytelling there, and just the music. It really I don't know how I'm going to top that now. All right, okay, yeah. let's give this a go. All right.
Ooh. Right, okay, are you ready?
As ready as I'll ever be, David.
Okay, and go.
Ooh, okay, it's nice and quiet, huh? Okay, so here's the thing, right. So, Eastern European lady and her brother get mad at capitalism, so they join a robot in destroying the world, except they don't realize he's going to destroy the world, so then they find that out and they go against him because they don't want to destroy the world. She then, like, gets... She then kills this robot, and what after her brother dies, saving a disabled archer. So she then gets rescued by the son of the robot that she was working with, who then she shares a look with, and you're like, ooh, what's happening here? She then joins the Avengers and blows up a hospital. This causes her to be put under house arrest for a while, where she continues making googly eyes at the robot that is essentially the son of the robot she was working with to destroy the world, but didn't realize she was working with to destroy the world. So then this carries on, everyone splits up because they're mad at each other, and she goes off with Vision to make love to him because now he's a human, or he can look human, because I guess that's a thing now. And then he gets stabbed, and then she gets angry, and then he dies again, and then she brings it back, and then he dies again, and then, oh god, I've lost it. Well, Craig easily won that one.
Can I just say, David set us the challenge of explain the story of Wanda and Vision, and both of us decided to go, well, Vision's just a robot, so screw him. This is Wanda's story.
I'm very much anti-AI, so he is just a robot to me. This is... This is the hill I will die on.
Yeah, I just loved the fact that, you know, you were just like, yeah, and then they get stabbed, and then, you know, it's just like, we just throw away death. Like, yeah, that just happens, you know, like, and then, like, you know, his brother dies, whatever, you know.
Tom was going for the more nuanced start. He was just like a child fight against capitalism. I was like, oh, damn, he's going to beat me. And then the time went on, it was just, robot gets stabbed. I'm just like, okay, fine.
I had a strong start, but I just lost it towards the end there, so I'll concede that to Craig.
Yeah, and you know, impressive, because as well, you know, Craig was first in there as well, so he had the tougher task. So yeah, well done. But you know, we'll revisit some challenges as we go along later when we have our ever fun end game, which is, you know, named after an Avengers film, so very fitting this week. So on to our main topic of the day then, which is Wanda and Vision. Their new series is out on Disney Plus now, the first two episodes. It is a homage to sitcoms of the several decades, and we get to finally now catch up with these characters, but it's all like a big mystery about what's happening, and we're seeing the styles of the 50s and 60s and 70s, all these different sitcom eras, but obviously with the idea that something's not right. There's something to do with Wanda's powers, something to do with S.W.O.R.D. and, you know, these organizations and more sinister characters. But the point that's taken us up to here is, you know, obviously all the different films. And, you know, they started off in Avengers Age of Ultron, which was the sequel to the 2012 film. And then their story has been pretty much told throughout Avengers and Avengers Light films, which I think is really interesting, is the fact that you've now got these characters who have their own series, but they started as supporting characters within a movie. It's the new environment we find ourselves in with streaming. So from the get-go, Tom, what is your thoughts about this idea of having characters who start off as movie characters and then go into television or streaming? Because it's kind of a different approach. We maybe have had some odd examples in the past. We're going to get this a lot more with shows like Loki and Falcon and Winter Soldier, you know. So what do you think of that entire change in the way we have our media and our superhero content?
I actually don't think it's too much of a change at all if you look at the sort of larger history of comic books, because this is something that I'm kind of used to from being a huge comic book fan. You'll often have characters like initially first appear in like, say, for example, you have a character who just starts appearing as a side villain or side like hero in Batman, and then like eventually, because he gets so popular, he gets his own solo series, or maybe some characters appear in the Justice League and again they just spin out and get their own solo series. It happens all the time in comics where you end up getting solo runs for characters you never thought you'd see solo runs for. So to see that translate to the MCU is something I'm all for, because I've always thought the MCU has done a good job at like emulating the comics, even right down to talking about like Wanda, for example, having her in Age of Ultron start off as a villain before joining the Avengers, because that's how she started off in the comics. She was a villain first, then an Avenger second. Just seeing the fact that they are kind of adopting a more comic book release mindset to their media now, I think can only be a good thing. And I think it's going to help, because lots of people have had the same question since Endgame, is how is the MCU really going to carry on? Is it going to be as good as it once was? How do you top like Thanos trying to destroy half the universe? And I think just the way they do that is just building up the world more. So I think having these like series or even new films for side characters or just like characters we haven't had a chance to see shine yet, it can only be a good thing. And it gives more opportunity then for like more characters from the comics that you might not have thought you'd have ever appear on screen to come into it. Like now we're going to have Monica Rambeau appear in WandaVision. I know she briefly appears in Captain Marvel as a child. The fact that it's like, oh, so we're actually going to see Spectrum in action later down the line, you never know, we could end up seeing a Spectrum solo series on Disney Plus or something. It is really interesting, as I said, to see that comic book approach really come into the movies and I guess TV shows now, and I think it can only be a good thing. I'm all for it, basically.
Yeah, I think, like I said, it makes sense to the comic book origins. Like you said, it's the fact of like having these spin-offs and these issues. It makes sense for that. You have these long spanning storylines. And I think even the series is kind of the numerical approach is kind of like comic book issue. Like I think they have like 9.1 and, you know, 9.0, you know, that kind of stuff with like the little like hashtags and stuff like that, which is like a nice touch. So yeah, it definitely makes sense for the comic book world. I think it is, and it's surprised how kind of on board everyone has got with this straight away. And I think again, it shows like that franchise mentality that so many studios are trying to do now. They're all trying to build their franchise, and you can see it with DC as well. They've done that. They've announced a Peacemaker show, which will be spun off from Suicide Squad before we've even seen that movie, which is a bit crazy. And they're trying to look at like, oh well, how can we like build the DCEU and HBO Max at the same time? So again, you know, even though these are all great for the fans, you know, at the end of the day, it's for these studios to be like, hey, we need content, we need to fill up our streaming services, and what better way to do it in these films that have got like a huge array of characters?
It just seems like an easier sell to me as well, right? Because I think the reason that you don't get that many comic book films which have like overly creative premises insofar as like the type of team ups they're going to put together, it's just because they have such expectations in terms of box office. They don't want to do anything which is way too risky. I mean, there's risk and then there's like ridiculous risk, right? So they were never going to have a Wonder Vision solo film, but putting it in a TV show where they can literally just redirect the nature of their story, I think it's going to be a lot easier for people to buy, and especially given the way they're doing the show so far. Because let's face it, they weren't really the most action orientated characters, and I think that's, I mean, like Scarlet Witch can throw down definitely, but the way that she fights, I don't think would be able to keep hold of an entire audience for like the length of a movie. But focusing on like, you know, sort of TV stakes, we'll call them, I think is the best direction for that character. And I think that's what like Marvel and the MCU are generally understanding, because they're obviously trying to shift away from, obviously they don't have Iron Man or Captain America anymore. So they have to work on these characters that don't have the same sort of fighting appeal that those two had, especially.
Yeah, that's very true, because I think it's quite clever as well, isn't it? That they're like, oh, well, we're on a TV budget now. How do we show this trippy, mind-bending stuff, which is still interesting to audiences, but do it on a lower budget or a lower scale? And it's like, hey, let's, you know, purposely make ourselves into a sitcom or a TV show. So, you know, even though they're doing gimmicky little, you know, things floating on strings and stuff, it's done in the purpose of obviously being authentic to those original programs, and they've got like, you know, the traditional sets and everything. So, but of course it's still a big budget sort of attempt at that. But yeah, it just means you can show that more sort of like mind-bending mystery stuff, which can keep people captivated for a series rather than like a film, like you said, Craig, in which somebody might sit down and be like, why am I watching this kind of stuff? And it looks like they're going to do that with a lot of the other series, where like Loki and stuff, where it's going to be more about, you know, like time stuff. And then I think the She-Hulk program sounds like that's going to be about like different cases and different superheroes come into it with different legal battles. Again, you know, like would somebody go to a film which is like, you know, oh, this superhero goes to court, and it's like, what? But as a series, that sounds really enticing.
Yeah, I agree. And I for one, am quite hyped for the She-Hulk series whenever that comes out. And also Moon Knight as well, seeing as we've got Oscar Isaac. And I think Ethan Hawke has just been announced to be in it as well. So that's shaping up to be something. And that's another show, I think, that is going to, not maybe to the extent of WandaVision, but it'll definitely be sort of a very trippy, surreal experience. But as I say, not to the extent of WandaVision, I think, especially if it's going where like we think it's going.
Definitely going to be interesting to see.
And also I think it'll show the differences in these series, because again, with Falcon and Winter Soldier, we've seen that that's maybe a bit more action orientated, and the fact that Moon Knight was sort of like pitched as this adventure series, and you know, like I think that to me maybe those are going to be the more action orientated stuff, maybe Ms. Marvel. But again, it's like things like She-Hulk and WandaVision are maybe where it's not as action orientated, but we'll see. Like I said, they've got a lot of time to play with. So yeah, it's definitely an interesting one, talking about how these characters are changing through the big films, how they're getting their series, and how we'll see that change. Like I said, classic example with the DC shows we'll be getting, like Peacemaker, and the Marvel shows we'll be getting. It's a new world in which, you know, movies and TVs often blend in together. So, you know, we look forward to seeing more of that in the future. But let's go back now to that film that we've touched on already, which is the introduction of Vision and Wanda, which was in Avengers Age of Ultron. It was directed by Joss Whedon and was obviously the follow-up to the very successful original film. And yeah, this is kind of the more slated of the Avengers 4 films and gets kind of overlooked. So I think this one is worth talking about as a whole as well, because I think it's not just because of Wanda and Vision that this story succeeds, but I think there's a lot of things that people overlook. And on watching them back, I definitely had like an interesting take watching these key Avengers films in a post Endgame world. So, you know, Tom, what's your feelings? I know that you sort of agree on in terms of the importance of Age of Ultron.
I have always loved Age of Ultron since I first watched it, and I think it is one of the most slept on Marvel films. Like, I get there are some genuine sort of issues with it, one plot point in particular, which I'll go to in a second, but I think overall, just like from what it's set up, it is arguably one of the most important MCU films, because it doesn't just like sort of help to set up more of Endgame with you know, like Thor getting that vision of like the stones coming together. It also sets up Ragnarok, because like within that same vision he gets, they basically set that up. It sets up like pretty much everything going on in that phase of Marvel to a huge degree. And there's just so much important stuff going on there that I think you can look past the sort of down parts of it. Like, okay, I agree that the whole Bruce-Natasha romance was maybe a bit unnecessary, but equally I also thought that, like, even though I wasn't a fan of it, it did kind of work within the context of the MCU and kind of the relationship the characters had been building. So I can't be too mad at that. But yeah, I just think overall, I think people need to give it a bit more of a chance than they do give it, because it is genuinely an incredibly important film to the MCU, and without it, so much doesn't get set up. And as well, it is a great introduction to two of the most important characters, the MCU, Wanda and Vision. So I just don't fully understand why people, not so much hate on it, but kind of, as we said, they consider it one of the lesser MCU films, and I do think that's a bit unfair.
I think the problem it has, I mean, at the time it came out, I definitely don't remember much initial hatred against it. I don't know whether that was just because I wasn't paying attention, or if just, I think the general impression I had was that it was good, but it was just that comparison of just like just comparing the overall spectacle of it to the first film. It didn't have that instant iconicness to it, I guess. I think what also didn't help it is the fact that I think the other major important thing it obviously builds up is that it is it's basically sets up the entire premise of Civil War, right? Because obviously they rely a lot on the events of that film in order to have any form of impact. And I know that a lot of people basically saw that film as like the true Avengers 2, just because of it. So I think that's why a lot of people sort of downgraded it, because they were just looking at it in that sort of comparison of, well, the actual events of it aren't as good as Civil War, which I probably do fall in that bracket, but I still think Age of Ultron is really good. It has like some issues that probably do put it down for me a little bit, but I still think it's good, quite good, very good.
Yeah, it's often looked as a, you know, Avengers 2.5 as like a essentially an Avengers film, because so many of them are in it. But that's what I also love about that film, is that it still manages to be a Captain America film at the same time. Like Tom and yourself said, there's so much in that film which is crucial not only to then Civil War, but just the entire MCU going forward, so that you introduce all of these characters, you know, including Vision, Wanda, Quicksilver, you know, and you get more expanded roles for, you know, Hawkeye, and you get like the introduction of, you know, you see like Ultron, etc., which I think at the time as well was, like you said, Craig, there was the fact that you didn't have the originality and the spectacle of the first film, because that was such a new and different thing. But there's also the fact that, you know, when you adapt like an Ultron story, then everyone is like, oh yeah, you know, like this big end of the world kind of narrative. But, you know, you're not going to be able to do that when they've already set up the way we're aiming towards Infinity War, and they want to tell it within that one film.
It doesn't help as well that the way they do Ultron isn't, it definitely screams of like, because I think people were starting to slowly see the sort of trope of just like the way in which the MCU conduct their humor. So the fact that Ultron himself basically comes off as a bit too Tony Stark-esque, as opposed to like his own entity, just didn't help things as well. Because at least like every other villain of like the main Avengers films, right, is, well, basically Loki and Thanos. They are bold personalities that basically stand out, right? So Loki definitely pays up the trickster, like, malevolent vibe, and then obviously gets a lot of development throughout the series, and Thanos is just the sympathetic slaughterer, I think is probably the best way of calling him. Ultron is just Tony Stark done bad.
Ultron is just a toaster with daddy issues, essentially.
A concerning comparison.
But yeah, it was the same way in the comics, except just directed towards Hank Pym. And I think that's just one you did touch on it there. Like, they did try and make Ultron a bit too funny. And I guess I get why they would do it, because, like, they had that one line where, like, it's like someone says to him, like, you can't fix things without... you can't fix things by breaking things. And he just goes, clearly you never made an omelette. And Tony just goes, oh, you beat me by 1 second. They're clearly showing there that, like, Ultron is basically just a warped Tony, which to a degree works because, as I said, in the comics, he's, like, created by Hank Pym. And so he does kind of take on a bit of Hank Pym's personality. So in the MCU context, it does work. But equally, it is a bit jarring when you're seeing this, who's supposed to be a really sinister, terrifying villain, really. Ultron is meant to be terrifying. And, like, he's just, like, joking about how he's casually forgotten the word children.
For me, the biggest scene is when he cuts off Claw's arm. Yeah. And he says, I'm so sorry. It's not that bad. It's like, dude, you're planning on wiping out the entirety of humanity. The hell do you care about slicing a guy's arm off?
It was Andy Serkis's arm. The guy's a treasure. You can't cut off Andy Serkis's arm. That's why he was upset. He was like, oh, I'm sorry, man.
I just meant to kill you, not disfigure you. Oh, no. It's Darth Vader all over again.
And that's why I think is, like, at the time, especially, is that people wanted this big, bad, menacing villain. And I think that's why, for me, it's interesting. You could be, I think, if time was different, if we went down a different reality, then, you know, if Whedon did stay on the franchise, I think we possibly would be here saying the writing was on the wall and, you know, we could see the problems from, you know, from Age of Ultron. Clearly wasn't interested in telling an Infinity War story or a Thanos story, but that didn't happen. And I think that, you know, the franchise was all the better for getting the Russos on, because as much as, again, I do love Age of Ultron, you know, the difference between Age of Ultron and Civil War is, like, vastly different, because in terms of style and the drama. But I still think that Whedon is doing a lot of things that the Russos do so well, which is giving the characters these stories and these arcs. But he does have a lot of, you know, Whedonisms and a lot of weird choices that he makes. And that, again, creeps into the comedy a lot more. I was kind of expecting it to just kind of end when he left. But I was like, no, that it does. I don't know whether it's because it's the Marvel humor. So the Marvel humor evolved from Whedon's humor, or whether that's just the Marvel humor and that's the way the studio likes it. So Whedon was just playing that up more. Don't know, but
I think it's, like, a bit of both, because, like, obviously, as you said, Whedon has a lot of Whedonisms that you see across, like, all of his projects. And I think it is just an element of both, because, like, even in the comic books, in Marvel comic books, they're very much full of quips. Like, even in, you get some serious characters who are just still throwing in quips, like, left, right and center. Spider-Man is the worst for it, though they kind of explain that away as, like, oh no, he just, like, tells these jokes constantly because he's trying to psych out the guys he's fighting. So you're just kind of like, oh, okay then.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does get a bit much sometimes. Like, there are some moments in Marvel films where just, like, it could be a much better moment if there wasn't a quip there. And sometimes they do feel a bit forced. And also, just another point I wanted to make, going back to, like, Ultron being this, like, quipping machine as well. The film Ultron was so different to the Ultron we saw in the trailers. Like, in the trailers, if you remember, they just had him basically just, like, going off that Pinocchio script, like, the whole, like, there are no strings on me. And it was, like, the creepy music in the background and, like, all the scenes of destruction as that music's going off. And you just think, Ultron's going to be this terrifying, like, entity. Like, I remember thinking, like, I'm going to be terrified of this villain. And then, yeah, it was just, as you say, you start noticing the problems then of just, like, why is everyone quipping so damn much? In, like not every moment needs to be filled with a joke. And I do think that is an issue Marvel needs to work on. And also, it could be a thing that, like, maybe WandaVision is a bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing there, because they've just literally made it a sitcom. So it's just them going, like, ah, you thought we had too many quips before. Well, guess what? Now we have an excuse.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Whedon definitely loves, like, innuendo as well. You can tell that in his writing and, like I said, the quips and different lines that come in there. And it was just a lot of that in his films, you know, where it's like, oh, you know, Cap, we understand if you can't get it up and stuff like that. And that was the bits that was a bit jarring. I was like, okay, this is a funny scene, but do we really need, like, that much, like, you know, innuendo thrown in here?
But I'm surprised you didn't mention hide the zucchini.
Yeah, this...
yeah, I try not to think about that.
but again, to me, watching this back now after seeing Endgame and Infinity War, I think that's the big difference for me, is that for people who were there in that mindset back when this film came out, I think it was very different because they wanted this big MCU villain, this big bad of all the, you know, the franchise, because as well as good as Loki was, he, you know, even that film kind of makes him the assistant, kind of, you know, the one carrying out the mission. And I think that, again, the trailers probably didn't help as well, but we've now had that with Thanos. We've had this big, like, epic, like, leader of armies, and, you know, like, who's willing to, like, you know, kill characters, etc., and not be apologetic about it. So I think that after seeing that now, that's where I can enjoy those elements of Age of Ultron a bit more, because I'm like, well, I've had that now. I can now enjoy Ultron for what he is that bit more. And the good thing that the MCU does is that they play to their strengths. So while Civil War is nothing like the comic book version of the story, they use it to work for the story that they've got. They're like, right, we've got these characters, this is the drama that we've got, this is how we're going to adapt it. And I kind of feel Ultron is the same. It's kind of like, right, well, we've got these inventor characters, we haven't yet introduced Hank Pym, let's make Tony Stark invent Ultron. And then it's like, oh, wouldn't it be interesting, because there's so much about Tony's ego and, you know, how he's always, you know, determined about the mission and putting a suit of armor around the world. Wouldn't it be interesting if Ultron was kind of like you guys said, you know, this alternate Tony Stark? And that thread carries on throughout. So again, like, credit to the Russos, because they carry on that throughout. Even in Endgame then, like Pepper and Tony say, you know, he can't stop. And that's when Pepper says in those, like, final moments, she's like, you can rest now, Tony, because it's that still the same storyline. He's still trying to protect and he can't slow down and he can't stop doing what he does. So I think that's where I was able to enjoy Age of Ultron a bit more. And because we've now had a lot of the stuff that we may be yearning for when that film originally came out. And I do enjoy some of the quips as well. I think the eggs thing is kind of fun. And, you know, like I said, even though the children, forgetting about children is a bit odd and stuff like that. I don't know. I think it's the performance by James Spader obviously helps a lot. And Whedon, you know, went for that actor specifically because he had seen him in television and loved him. So I think that he does add, like, this massive gravitas to the role. And I think my biggest problem is, again, how he just sort of, like, bulks up at the end and he's like, I'm Megatron now and stuff like that. And the fact that he just gets this kind of unceremoniously, like, that's one of the worst humor moments, is when they, like, all have this epic, like, firing at Ultron and he gets torn away. And he's like, on second thought, and then they, like, bash him. I'm like, did you have to do that? We've had this epic takedown of a villain. And then he's like, oh, on reconsideration. I'm like, no, like, you know, imagine if that happened to Thanos. Like, he was like, oh, you know what? Maybe I was wrong. And then, you know, Thor hit him with the hammer. That to me was really, like, unceremonious. I didn't like that.
Yeah, but that wasn't the final version of him, right? The entire thing with Ultron was he could transfer bodies, right? So if you're going to support the quips, I think the individual body can have something like that. To the point that I think the only death you can have to focus on is his final one, his final body. And you can't tell me that wasn't a beautiful death for him.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's two, you know, Wanda gets one and Vision. So I love both of those. But it's just the character itself has almost shown that he's like, you know what, maybe I was wrong. So it's just in the character, he's already admitting some form of, like, maybe I was wrong.
He's being sarcastic. It's the sort of thing that Tony Stark would do.
Just, yeah, you know, but again, I just think it's... hindsight.
I just think, again, it's just misplaced. I didn't like it at that moment because that was meant to be the big epic moment. But again, Ultron's death later on, yeah, beautiful. I love those moments.
Yeah. I do like how we were supposed to be talking about how much we enjoyed and loved Age of Ultron, but we just seem to be complaining about it at the moment.
Yeah, well, that's why I put it in the context of, like, well, we had, you know, that... that, you know, so, but now obviously we've seen Endgame and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, to go back to the stuff I do like, I like that they're able to give, you know, Hawkeye, you know, that this bigger storyline. I think I do feel bad that like Joss Whedon had to leave the franchise, because I think he said that they put a gun essentially to that like farm scene, or that entire storyline, because they were like, you put in this Thor, you know, stuff, or like, you don't get your Hawkeye on the farm stuff, which I'm like, again, like Tom, because I always, you know, I love Hawkeye and I want to see more of him. I'm like, yeah, I'm glad that Whedon fought for that stuff. It is really important and it added a lot more to the character. And I think that the Natasha and Hulk stuff, again, I get it somewhat, but I think, again, it works on the concept of this is what we've got to play with in the MCU. We haven't got these characters. And, yeah, they kind of did need some sort of relationship or dynamic within the team, and I kind of thought it made sense. It is a bit gimmicky that they were like, oh, these are the two people who met up in the first film, and, you know, Natasha even says to Nick Fury, is like, is that why you sent me to him? That, I think, is a bit too on the nose. But I like the aspect of they both see themselves as monsters. They both see themselves as troubled. I get on board with that.
I don't quite like how she brings up the context of her thinking she's a monster, because she says that, like, after she gives a story about her basically being sterilized. And it's just like, well, that doesn't inherently make you a monster just because you've been... If anything, that makes the people who did that to you monsters, not you yourself. I mean, and also the whole thing of Whedon apparently telling Elizabeth Olsen to cry prettier, or something like that, he said on set. This is what I've heard from various like reports, and I don't know like how true it is, though. But does bug me a little bit that whole like you think what was it she says, like, you think you're the only monster around here. I didn't quite like the context that was brought up.
I mean, yeah, I can understand what they were, I mean, two things. One, I can understand what they were going for, just in terms of she was specific, that was done to her to make her a more effective killing machine, which is what is supposedly the thing that makes her a monster. It doesn't come across like that to audiences, and I completely sympathize with like the sort of anger backlash that did happen against that stuff. But two, I think they were just a little bit too quick within the film to sort of insinuate like them being a thing, right? So, which is why I think they needed like some like hints in some of the other films that happened. And it just seems quite full on, right? The fact that she's the one who's literally able to break him out of the Hulk stance. And then they have like incredibly deep flirtatious conversations at the party just seems a bit quick, as opposed to like the other team romance, which we're meant to be discussing in more detail. Wanda and Vision, which at least have, while probably still has some degree of pacing issues, at least has a lot more hints towards it that it's a like genuine legitimate relationship.
Yeah, and I think it also has the advantage of being an established kind of comic book romance, whereas like Hulk, yeah, Black Widow is like, I mean, there might possibly be an example in the comics of them having dated maybe once or twice. I don't claim to have read every single Marvel comic, but yeah, but WandaVision is a very like famous sort of comic book couple, so I think they had that benefit where they could get around the, because I agree with you, Craig, there was a bit of pacing issues there, but it is obviously just because like their roles compared to some of the others in the MCU was a bit more limited. But yeah, because they've, yeah, got that wider history behind them, I think that's why it kind of works better. That and Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany seem to have like great chemistry on screen as well.
Yeah, I think for me, again, I'm not saying it's like perfect or anything like that. I think the monster stuff, I kind of see it as like she is commenting on the fact that she's like been altered and she's like had her humanity taken away from her, so that like she is just like an assassin. I understand what people say is that like, oh, you shouldn't see yourself as a monster for that. But again, I don't think the film is like saying that she is. It's just tragic that she does see herself that way. And there's a lot of people who are like that. They're like, this is my fault. And you're like, well, how is this your fault? So again, it's not like the film is like saying that that's true. It's just saying that she believes that.
But there's nothing that ever disputes that, though. At the no point is she ever told, no, you're not a monster because of it. Because the conversation happens, he basically turned around and said, so what, we basically just run off together and just leave everything behind. There's never an official rebuke to that. I think that's what people's issue is.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose just from, like, I always saw just from, like, her point of view is that, like, again, it's just tragic that she sees herself that way, and that's part of the tragedy of the character, and Bruce is sort of, like, not, you know, sympathizing at the, in that he's like, yeah, we all have these crosses we must bear kind of idea. So, and, you know, obviously they're relating to the fact that neither of them can, you know, raise a family and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, again, it's not perfect, but to wrap up on the film, like I said, I think there's still, you know, there's obviously the Vision and Wanda stuff is great. I think that, you know, you get straight away, you can tell, like, Wanda is a really different character for the MCU. She's really powerful. You get these great scenes, you know, like when Quicksilver dies and she, like, has that explosion, all the enemies around her disintegrate. Obviously, her taking out Ultron's heart is fantastic. And, but even just the film as a whole, I think that, like, it looks a lot more stylish than the first Avengers film, because as good as that is and good as the action is, you know, Whedon even said, you know, he had a lot of criticism for it not looking very film-like, for looking a bit kind of just bright and colourful and not look, you know, looking a bit TV-like. So I think that they do a lot better visually in the sequel. And I think that a lot of the drama works a lot better for me. I think in the first Avengers film, the kind of forced drama of, like, oh, Loki's trying to influence the Hulk and all this kind of stuff, I've always found that a bit forced and a bit gimmicky. So I kind of came out of it thinking, like, you know what? I think that Avengers is, like, the more famous and better film for, like, what it did for superhero films and for the franchise, and that amazing New York sequence on his own is just fantastic. So, but I think just actually, like, technically, I think the Age of Ultron is a better film story-wise and script-wise. But again, you can't be what Avengers did, because it was the first to do what it did. But yeah, that was my sort of hot take, is that I sort of had, like, Age of Ultron, like, half a star above Avengers.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there, because I do love the first Avengers film, especially, like, what it represents. But yeah, I think we were talking about this the other day, David. Like, we go back and watch it now, and it's still, like, great, but you can just point out a few more holes in it. And I think Age of Ultron does hold up maybe slightly better, as you said, like, maybe half a star higher on that.
To wrap it up, like, what are your guys' sort of final thoughts on, like, the story of Wanda and Vision, you know, go into Civil War, to Infinity War, to Endgame? Both of you, just tell me, you know, what do you think, like, are your highlights, and what do you think are the strengths of the story that they've had, which have been told in these three films?
Strength wise, I think, as we talked about, I think, despite some pacing issues, they've done a good job of building up, like, the chemistry between the two characters, Wanda and Vision. Like I said, I think Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany work really well together. From that first, like, sort of the first moments of Vision's existence in Age of Ultron, when, like, you can kind of see the looks that, like, Wanda is giving him, and then that moment when, like, the city is falling from the sky and he appears in the bus to, like, grab her and, like, save her, and it's just that brief moment when they're looking at each other, helps, like, obviously, like, it's basically just so, like, people know, like, oh, these two are going to be, like, attached in later films. But I do think they do a wonderful job of building up that relationship, and just the brief moments you have of them, like, together in Infinity War before Corvus Glaive attacks, it was just, like, some really sweet, nice moments. I think they do a good job of showing how much these two characters really care for each other, and so I think that's why, like, one of the Wanda's best moments is when she appears in Endgame to attack Thanos, and she's like, "You took everything from me," and he's like, "I don't even know who you are," and she's like, "You're about to." Yeah, it is a bit of a shame that we didn't obviously see Vision come back in Endgame to get, like, a big moment, because I felt that, like, in Infinity War, whilst he had a couple of good hits in against Corvus and Proxima in the Amsterdam, Vision didn't really get to do a whole lot. Like, this, like, the only thing he really got, he just didn't get to really show off, I think, in Infinity War and Endgame, while he wasn't in Endgame at all. But I do think that's because they kind of fell into the trap of, like, building up the character to be so powerful, so it's like you kind of got to, like, wipe him out early, because otherwise he's just going to fix every problem. But then obviously, like, going back to Civil War, I think like a particularly strong moment there was obviously like you have all those interactions between Wanda and Vision throughout the film with like the kind of flirting and showing each other they care about each other, and then kind of getting a bit like Wanda getting a bit mad at Vision because he's keeping her like in Tony's apartment or whatever, or the Avengers mansion, whatever you want to call it. And but it's a bit later on where obviously like Vision, he arrives at the fight scene at the airport, and the way they frame it is like Cap and his boys are screwed now because Vision showed up, like he can win this thing like that. But then like he sees Wanda gets hurt and all of a sudden he freaks out. He's meant to be this cold calculating machine who never makes mistakes, and yet he somehow like blows Rhodey out of the sky rather than like disabling Falcon's like wings to stop them like going after everyone. And
he miscalculated it,
that way like Tony's like asking Vision like what the hell happened, and Vision's like I miscalculated, like I got emotional, and Tony's like I thought that wasn't meant to happen. And I thought it was just like a good thing to cement just like how Wanda makes Vision feel more human than he actually is. And I think that is just, I think it is, it's just a beautiful story and all, just the fact that like these two very unlikely, it's a very unlikely pairing, and yet they found each other in this like sort of crazy world, and Wanda is clearly dealing with the loss very, very well. I think it's very clear from WandaVision she's coping fine. I don't anticipate any problems moving forward. I think she's dealing with her grief in a healthy manner. I hope, anyway. But yeah, that's my thoughts. So anyway, I love the two characters. I've loved their journey across the MCU. I'm excited to see more of WandaVision, and I'm just excited to see how crazy that gets and the huge implications that it's going to have for the larger MCU going forward. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to seeing more of them and more Vision, because I always love more Vision. I love Paul Bettany. I think he's been a delight in the WandaVision so far, as we talk about on the Capes, Cowls and Masks. So yeah, I'm just excited to see more of their journey together and to see how amazingly it's going to turn out.
It's actually surprising how well developed the relationship has been so far, given how, when you actually look at how much time they've had within the movies, they've had surprisingly little amount of time, right? Like, as a sort of thing, they've only really had the subplots of two movies. Because, let's face it, Age of Ultron doesn't really do anything to develop this whatsoever. I don't think the carrying and the look is enough to constitute romantic engagement. If it is, it's a very archaic way of romantic engagement, which is kind of bad. But just the way in which they both act in, I think specifically Civil War, definitely sells it quite well. The fact that they're able to have like that connection despite the fact they end up being on different sides is just because they don't know exactly how to handle themselves. So it's then quite nice when you see them actually having worked things out somewhat in Edinburgh, not Amsterdam. Sorry, Tom.
Oh, my bad.
It's just because I've been hearing Radio 1 recently talking a lot about the scene where they're outside of a kebab shop and the sign just says, "We will deep fry your kebab." Not "we can," yes. "We will."
Yes, I don't know why I thought Amsterdam. I really don't know. Oh well,
they are renowned for deep frying things,
and it's a common thing. I think there's another creator which me and Craig watch on YouTube, which called the Glasgow. It's like, why can nobody get this famous city right?
it's a place. It's a lovely little place.
And then worse, you have an entire film basing their plot within Edinburgh, despite the fact they shouldn't be in Edinburgh. Thank you, Eurovision movie. What I've actually really enjoyed about bringing WandaVision into this, the two episodes that have aired so far, what I'm really enjoying is that the one thing you never really got to see of them was just them in lighthearted situations. There's always some degree of tension and contemplation that's going on with those scenes, even the scenes where they are together, because they're on the run. Just seeing them in like these quirky sitcom antics is actually quite nice, because those sitcoms were always about like the idea of conformity anyway, and you have two characters who all they really want is to like conform within society in some way, so it makes perfect sense that they're in like a sitcom environment. The fact that the plot of the first episode is literally the most typical, my boss is coming to dinner and we haven't got things prepared, that entire like that's incredibly symbolic of like the 50s sitcom era anyway, that sort of plot line. So the fact that they're doing it with their own stint just makes perfect sense. It's just fun watching them like in those scenarios. That's what I'm enjoying about that relationship as well. Like you've already got the idea of like they care deeply for each other. I just want to see now more of just how they utilize that more before we get into what I imagine is going to be a load of PTSD.
Yeah. I think what is really great as well is that they've never made it kind of like, oh, a woman and an android, what's going on here? You've never had like some Avenger or some person being like, that's wrong, or any of this kind of stuff. They've just like just gone with it, which I think is great as well. And they've just, you know, forced the audience to be like, yeah, we're doing this. You know, they've never made it a thing, which I think is also cool. And that works in the elements that Craig was mentioning as well, is still the idea of like, oh, we are an odd couple and, you know, we are strange, but they're constantly trying to conform. And is, you know, in the, what we've seen in WandaVision already, they're kind of like, oh, for the children, have you got children? So then they're like, oh, we need to have children because, you know, this is like the acceptable thing to do in society. And
I think there is an in-universe explanation as to why nobody has said, why on earth is that powerful witch with magic powers that could kill us, and that android who has like the ability to shoot lasers at us, they shouldn't be together. What is this? Oh, I seem to be on fire.
I seem to have died. Yeah, and I think that
it appears my insides are burning.
But yeah, I think that that's always been a great element of their storyline as well, is the idea of conformity and what Tom said about, you know, that like humanizing Vision, that he's changing. And he says that in Infinity War, he says, you know, that the stone and himself are becoming different, you know, he's becoming separate. And that's what I love in a Civil War. That's one of my favorite ever lines. I just, as soon as I saw it in the cinema, I was like, that's so cool. I just loved it. It's just when she takes down Vision, when she like blasts him into the ground, and she says, you know, I can't control their fear, only my own. And I just think that that's such a beautiful line for like conformity and for like accepting society, because it's true about so many cultures and so many people today, you know. And what we're living through a lot of the time is that, you know, people will be worried about what other people think about them all the time, and like, oh, I need to do this, I need to act this certain way. But at the end of the day, you can't control what people think of you, and that's what a lot of people out there are all about. You know, they wear their heart on their sleeve. They're about, you know, showing themselves in their true colors, which is becoming a bigger thing. And I think that's why Wanda has become such, you know, a big character for a lot of people. And then the fact, God, those moments, like you mentioned, Tom, of like, you know, I don't even know who you are. Oh, you will, sort of thing, you know, and showing her with her true power. Everyone loves, you know, a kind of unhinged, badass character. And she's definitely one of those. And I think the fact that, you know, what Craig alluded to earlier as well, is the fact you've got characters like Cap and Iron Man. They're all sort of physical fighters. She's the only sort of like supernatural character in the MCU, really. So everyone is sort of supporting her to like unleash and show that supernatural powers, because it's not an X-Men film. We don't see that as much. So I think that's fantastic. And that's why it's led us to where we are. And I think that it's great that we now get to spend more time with these characters. And there's that element of like, oh yeah, we get to see the relationship, but we also get to see some really like crazy reality warping stuff as well. So like you both said, I think they've done a fantastic job of setting this up, you know, in small bits throughout the series, through the drama and everything that's happened. And I think it's because they've stayed true to those core concepts of the characters. So to wrap everything up, for those who don't know, we have our section, which is the Movie Vault, which is encapsulating movies for all time so they can be preserved and discovered hundreds of years later. If we would have a vault of movies, which was to teach you about the, you know, the great art of film. And yeah, I think interestingly from today, if we're talking about the MCU, what two films are already in the Movie Vault where we discussed on our movies of the decade are Avengers and Avengers Endgame. And I would just say that we just need to complete the set and just put in Age of Ultron and Infinity War, is my personal opinion, is that you could then see that full story. You can see how epic and how what a feat it was to have this entire universe building franchise. And you get to see the story of Wanda and Vision, because Civil War is in there as well. So you're pretty much going to have the entire storyline up until their series. What do you guys think?
I completely agree. At the end of the day, I think there isn't really a a bad Avengers film.
No.
So it makes sense, even regardless of like character development across like multiple stories. Just having probably the most successful movie franchise of all time, fully represented with its core entries of like the actual full ensemble, makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm completely with you there.
Into the movie vault this week then goes Avengers Age of Ultron and Avengers Infinity War. Let us know at home if you agree and if what you would like to see put into the movie vault. What other MCU films do you think deserve to go in there? At the moment, it is mainly just the Avengers and Cap Civil War, I believe. So, you know, lots of opportunities for us to talk about the MCU in the future, which we look forward to. But now we must wrap things up. And like the Avengers franchise, you know, we must come to an end with Endgame. So we will play our usual Endgame, which this week we'll see Craig up against our guest, Tom.
We're in the Endgame now.
Oh, it's so annoying. So this week's Endgame is called Wandering the Channels. So what I'm going to do for you guys this week is we're talking about WandaVision, which is obviously paying tribute to television sitcoms and is a TV series that's based off a movie franchise. But often something that happens is that we get TV series that turn into movies. And often some of those can be sitcoms, some of them can be action shows. There's a big variety of different ones we get. So I'm going to play for you segments of different movie trailers, and I want you to buzz in and tell me what movie adaptation of a TV series you are listening to.
Right, so it's a TV series, not necessarily a sitcom?
It's a TV series, no, not necessarily a sitcom. There might be sitcoms in there, but it's just general TV series turned into movies.
Okay.
Okay, I'm with you.
So, you know, we got a nice theme in the trailers as well. You know, we get that handy narration that we have in like the old timey trailers as well, which can help you out. So yeah, some of them are sitcoms, some of them are not, but just it's the first person to buzz in and tell me what movie it is. So I'll award a point for just each correct answer, and then there'll be bonus points if you can get it a bit earlier. Some of the clips might be a bit longer, some of them might be a bit shorter depending on how much they reveal, etc. So are you guys ready?
Yep, ready to regain my honor.
Right, so let's go for clip number one. So be ready with your buzzers, guys. Here we go.
This summer, between honor and dishonor, between family and enemies, between July and August, a line will be drawn. And then colored in yellow.
Oh, right. So that was Craig.
Is it the Simpsons movie?
Is it the Simpsons movie?
Oh, probably was now, wasn't it? Wasn't it?
It was the Simpsons movie. Ah. Well done, Craig. Yeah, so obviously the big clue there was colored in yellow with that traditional movie.
Boy, I'm so glad I waited. I was going to put the Recess movie at one point. So I was like, oh God, no.
Yeah, that would be a great one. Immediately after that, you get the whip scene. So, you know, I was like, that would have just been too much of a giveaway.
Yeah, that would have given
right,
it away.
Okay, so the first point there goes to Craig. So, buzz is cleared. The next clip.
Doctor, atomic scientist, poet.
How now, brown cow?
Meteorologist, physicist, marksman.
Are you paying attention?
John Stewart, agent, member of secret.
Okay, so that we have Tom has buzzed in.
I'm taking a huge guess here just based off the fact that I kind of recognize the name Emma Peel. And I'm not sure if there's been a more recent adaptation, but is it perhaps Avengers, but based off the Avengers TV series, the Spy series?
Is it the Avengers?
Oh, crap, it's going to be.
It is the Avengers. Well done.
Yes.
So, yeah, obviously I had to put that in because, again, classically in the UK, we had to call Avengers, Avengers Assemble, because yeah. some people can't differentiate between two completely different franchises, apparently. And
Fantastic. Yeah,
a classic TV show adaptation which shares a name with the Marvel superheroes.
What? How old is that trailer? Because that sounded incredibly like 90s.
It was 1998 or something like that, I believe.
I thought Avengers was older than that.
The actual TV series is like the 60s and stuff. Sean Connery in it, I suppose, tells us that it definitely was old. 1 point there to Tom. So a level pegging. The next one. Get ready, guys.
Just when his career...
Sherpa!
...hit an all-time low. Movie star Jack Wyatt is getting one last shot.
You're gonna do a television series and it's gonna be a big hit. A
couple of big names are available for Samantha.
I want an unknown in the lead.
So, should be fun. Huh?
Now, after weeks of searching,
good.
He's found the perfect witch.
Oh my goodness!
Sorry.
Oh, we have an answer in. Right, so it's from Craig.
All right, I'm just going to explain the logic of why I think it's this. It's clearly Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
They've talked about a witch. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It could be a sitcom. It's Bewitched.
Is it Bewitched? It is Bewitched. I would have given you 2 points if you had it before he mentioned, like, the perfect witch. But, that was a big clue, so I'll give you 1 point for that one.
Sure.
So, yeah, I think this is...
Wait, how many did you give for Simpsons, then? Was that just 1 point?
That was just one as well, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was the trailer for Bewitched, which was a adaptation of the classic sitcom, which, you know, they've also paid tribute to in WandaVision, hence that showing up here. And, I just love how that's just got some hilariously unhilarious Will Ferrell comedy in there, like hummus. Like, why did you have to put that in the trailer? Like, isn't this funny?
Yes. I mean, I still love the Family Guy ripping on Bewitched with the holy water.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Right, so are you guys ready for the next one?
Bring it on.
Yeah.
Here we go.
This summer, our world will come under attack.
The mayor has declared a state of emergency.
By the most evil force ever known. He has armies at his command. And only one power on Earth can stop him. Welcome to my nightmare. Now, the ultimate adventure begins.
Hi, honey. I'm home.
You garlic-sucking dingle brain!
We have an answer in. So, that was Craig.
I've buzzed, but I think I'm wrong.
All right. What are you going for?
Oh, why did I buzz?
What are you going for?
Smurfs.
I mean, it might be, maybe.
Is it Smurfs?
It could be.
It's no, not Smurfs.
Of course
no.
It's not.
Tom, do you have a guess as to this one?
No, not a clue, to be honest.
Are you giving up on this one, or do you want to hear it again, or do you think you're not going to get it?
I don't know if another listen is going to help, to be honest. You know, I'm just going to throw out a random guess. I'm just going to just like throw a bunch of darts at the wall and hope one of them lands.
Okay.
Rocky and Bullwinkle. I don't know.
Decent guess, but unfortunately, it was wrong. Craig, any more thoughts?
It's not Hong Kong Phooey, is it?
No, that's not had a movie adaptation.
I don't know.
You're going to kick yourselves. It's the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie.
Are you actually kidding me?
Yeah.
So you could hear Ivan Ooze in there when he had his little quips. And obviously the, you know, I thought that was a bit of a clue. It obviously, I wasn't.
What was the laughing? Who was laughing in that?
I think that was some of the like henchmen.
Oh, God damn it.
I just love as well how that trailer doesn't, you know, the Power Rangers movie was just like, let's keep this like secret as to whether this is a Power Rangers movie. They're like the greatest heroes on Earth and it doesn't say who they are. And then they're like the greatest villain who has lots of armies. I'm like, right. You know, like,
yeah, I think that's what also threw me, because Ivan Ooze, one set of minions.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, so... no points for that one. So I think the buzz is still cleared. Yep. So on to the next one. Oh.
Damn it.
Good point. That
I'm gonna hate myself if I'm. Yeah, I'm gonna hate myself if I'm wrong now.
So, what are you going for, Tom?
Oh God, I'm gonna be wrong now. Is it Dukes of Hazzard?
Is it Dukes of Hazzard? It is, yeah. Dukes of Hazzard. Well done.
So
yeah, I wouldn't have. I knew it. I forgot what that show was called. I knew it was that. Like, I was gonna say Starsky and Hutch. I'm like, it's not.
Yeah.
That was the thing. As soon as I was about to say Dukes of Hazzard, I was like, wait, but what if it is Starsky and Hutch? Oh God.
Yeah, I don't know whether to give the 2 points. There was the horn, which was maybe a but
I didn't hear no horn. What horn? I didn't
come on, at that point is the defining thing between that and Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll accept just
so we'll go for the 1 point on that one. Okay, buzzers reset. Get ready.
This Christmas, for the first time, America's most exciting and legendary motion picture hero comes to the screen like you've never seen him before.
Any ideas so far?
Are you joking?
Wait, is that it? Wow. That could be anyone.
I'm not betting on that.
Is that all we get?
So listen to what he's saying. So most legendary hero. It's in the 90s because it's got that voiceover guy. It's animated.
Wow, that really helps narrow it down.
It's comic book related.
I'm going for it then.
Okay, Craig.
Is it Mask of the Phantasm? Batman Mask of the Phantasm.
Is it Mask of the Phantasm? It is Mask of the Phantasm. Yeah, that was a tricky one, but the clip immediately after that was like, it's Batman. I was like, I can't. So,
what was that?
That was...
Yeah.
That was Bugs Bunny during the Warner Brothers logo when he chews the... I was thinking...
See, that
was
throwing me off, because then I started thinking of like, wait, what sort of like animated animal characters had films in the 90s?
I heard it the first time and thought somebody did something.
Yeah, I thought it was like you or Craig first, and I was just like, that's really distracting that.
And then I heard it back, I was like, oh, it is, isn't it? And I thought... Shall I say this is a clue? I was like, no, that'll throw you off too much. So, yeah.
We would have been saying Looney Tunes films.
Yeah. I would have just gone Space Jam at some point. I was ready to just pounce with that.
Right. Next clip. Get ready.
Close your eyes. Open your imagination.
Make believe.
Think big. And go purple.
Any ideas?
Think big and go purple. Think big and go purple. That doesn't...
There's a lot of innuendos I'm not comfortable with in this clip.
Oh, God.
Any ideas? Just think about the tone, like the magic, the purple. Think childhood.
Not going to be honest, I can't think of many magical purple things from my childhood.
Right, so I'm going to have to call this one as a loss. Craig, you're going to kick yourself for this one.
Who eats flamingos?
Ah!
So the answer is Barney the dinosaur. It is.
Where
the
does magic come into that?
I know, he's a giant purple dinosaur that doesn't eat people. I suppose that's quite magical.
Not all dinosaurs were carnivores, David, first of all.
True.
Jot that down.
Yeah.
We better get started having fun right now.
God damn it. And Stanley, I couldn't play any of the rest of that. They literally just say the word Barney and... no points in that round. And Barney's Great Adventure. That's the adaptation there.
I also didn't realize Barney had a film. Like, of course Barney has a film.
For those who don't know, it's a common in joke that we have, like, as a reference to Barney the dinosaur being a flamingo eater on this show, so that's why I had to throw that in there. So yeah, we have like our mascot Swiss Lodge
is still here, standing strong.
Not heard from Swiss Lodge in a while. It's good to see him.
Yeah.
Before there was a Secret Service, before there was a CIA, before there was an FBI, there was...
West. Jim West.
But behind every great man is a beautiful woman.
Stay out of my way, lady!
Lady, I'm a U.S. Marshal!
Now what?
Will Smith.
You're not the master of...
I just carried off later. Craig, what are you going for?
Wild Wild West.
Is it Wild Wild West? It is. Definitely getting the 1 point on that, because again, it was like pretty much as Will Smith and the music came in.
Well, no, it was like West. I was thinking like, oh, what's that show called? The Sheriff. And it's Will Smith. Oh wait, it's that. And then the big worry is it actually called Wild Wild West, or is that just the name of the song?
I know. I was tempted to take out like where he said his name. I was like, is that too much of a giveaway? But apparently not. So. But yeah, Wild Wild West is loosely based on a TV series, so hence that's in there. So another point there for Craig. So at the moment it is 4-2 to Craig. Ooh. Pressure's on, Tom. Get ready for the next one, guys.
Okay.
In England, he is a national treasure. In Australia, he is a beloved icon. In our small island in the Pacific, he is worshipped as a god. And this fall, he's coming to America.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Bean.
Right, so who was actually first on that? Okay, so that was Craig.
Bean.
Is it Bean? It is. I was going to have that pause there when they just had the, like, come into America bit, but did you have any clues before that?
I'm not going to lie. When I first heard the music, I thought it was going to be Thunderbirds for some reason.
For some reason, I was thinking Alan Partridge, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I can see that logic, to be fair.
More of a legit guess than Thunderbirds.
Well, that is it, guys. That was your last trailer, so... We have now come to the end. So yeah, the master of the end game, the usual host of these, has come out victorious. There's no shame in that, Tom. Congratulations, Craig.
No, I take great shame in that. I will be committing seppuku shortly after this recording.
Well, there goes one returning guest.
Yeah. Hey, I could still return. It could just be a Weekend of Bernie situation.
It'd be like... was a katana. You'd be like, you'll be trapped in the sword. You do seppuku on yourself, and you'll be a soul that visiting us. Congratulations, Craig. Hope everyone enjoyed those trailers and intros there, and have fun playing at home. What other movie adaptations would you like to see us talk about or feature in the future? I tried to put ones like the Flintstones in there, but you know, the Flintstones was like, there was just too much in the trailer. There was no getting around that it was a Flintstones trailer. So So yeah, that wraps up everything for today. We've had great fun talking about Wanda and Vision in the MCU, talking about Avengers Age of Ultron and all the films that these characters have appeared in. We're looking forward to watching the rest of this series at the moment. And yeah, you can also catch our review of the series, our written review by Ali, on our website freshtakehub.com. So go check out that written review, which will be up now. And yeah, Tom, you can catch yourself talking about it on another podcast. So where can we catch that, and where else can we catch you? Plug some stuff.
Well, you can catch me on Capes, Cowls and Masks, Dave's the other show, which he does with Jake, where, yeah, we'll be talking about WandaVision in a lot more detail than we have here, and going into our theories and speculations to how the show will come on. I am starting to make a bit more of a presence on Twitter right now, so you can find me at Gapperboy, that's B-O-I, on Twitter. For occasional nerdy witticisms and complaints about how little I use Twitter. And hopefully I will also be getting a Letterboxd account soon, so when I actually have one, we can plug that. But thanks for having me on the show, and
No worries. It's been a pleasure.
Hope to see you guys again soon.
Yeah, hopefully. Like I said, lots of comic book stuff to go through this year, and yeah, we're going to have a great year of movie conversations up ahead. You know, we've recently planned our upcoming episodes. We have some corkers coming up for you guys. We can't wait to show you everything that we've got planned. It's going to be a lot of fun, and some good distractions from everything that's going on in the world. Craig, anything lastly from yourself?
None of this is real.
Oh god.
Oh my god.
Craig, who's doing this to you? Craig.
Seriously, go and watch WandaVision. It's great so far.
Yeah, it's great. Go check it out on Disney Plus. The first two episodes are out right now. And yeah, go check out the rest of our episodes as well. You can catch us talking about lots of other comic book stuff before. We talked to Jake about the X-Men franchise. We talked about the DC franchise, Joker. And yeah, we're glad to be talking about some more Marvel stuff now. So you can catch us, as usual, on all our socials, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, at Well Good Movies. And you can also catch us on our website, which is freshtakehub.com, where you can catch that review of WandaVision. And you can also catch all our previous episodes, and you can follow those socials as well. So thank you once again, guys. And yeah, I look forward to talking movies with you again in the future, and hope everyone at home is being safe. Catch you all soon. Bye.
I'm out of here. None of this is real.